Every successful business, battleship, and badminton team has one person whose role it is to be the boss, someone in charge, in control, who says the buck stops here. And speaking of bucks, who's the boss of yours? Today on MoneyWise Live, making the decision to take control of your money and not the other way around, and some ways to do it. Our boss is Kingdom Advisors President Rob West. Now, we're pre-recorded today, so please hold your calls until next time. But we have some interesting questions already lined up. I'm Steve Moore, so let's get started. And Rob, you like being referred to as the boss, don't you? I mean, I remember when we started working, you asked me to call you that as often as possible.
I don't remember that.
I mean, well, maybe that's just the tone of your voice the aura that
I'll keep that in mind.
All right. We know that God is really our boss. God is really our boss when it comes to managing our money and our finances. So why are we talking about us being the boss of our money?
Well, that is certainly true, Steve. God created everything, and he owns everything. But he's put each of us in charge of just a tiny portion of his holdings. He expects us to be faithful stewards of his resources and to do what we have to control money and not let money control us. Now, God hasn't left us in the dark about how to do this. His word contains well over 2,000 verses about money and possessions so that we can be faithful stewards. And what a lot of folks don't realize is that by following those directions or rules, if you will, we become financially free. Don't follow them, and you're likely to become a slave to money.
Okay, so what are some practical steps or ways that we can take to become the boss of what God's entrusted to us?
Yeah. Well, you've heard the saying, success is 10% inspiration and 90% perspiration. Well, success in handling your money may be 90% avoiding debt. If you can't do that, not much else is going to work. So let's focus there. If you have trouble managing your credit and debit cards, meaning your spending is out of control, stop using them. There was a time once when credit cards didn't exist. People used something called cash, and there's no reason you can't do it today with most of your budget categories. The advantage to using cash is you can't overspend like with a credit card. That part is just simple math. But there's also a very strong psychological component to using cash. When you have to hand over actual dollars, it's much more difficult to part with them. Studies show people spend 10 to 30% less just by using cash. So it's a real help in controlling impulse spending.
Yeah, it sure is. What if you already have a balance on one or more credit cards?
Yeah, and a lot of people do. By one estimate, about 43% of general purpose credit cards like Visa and MasterCard have a balance on them with an average balance of more than $6,000. There's only one way those credit cards will ever be paid off, and that's to forget about making minimum payments. When you pay just the minimum on your credit card each month, a lot of that money is going toward interest only, so it'll take years to pay off. The credit card company thinks their prayers have been answered. That's what they want you to do. So pay as much as you can above the minimum each month to get that card paid off quickly.
So what if you have more than one card, two or three perhaps? How do you decide how much to pay on each of them?
Yeah. Well, other studies have shown that paying off credit cards is as much psychological as it is financial. If you concentrate on the highest interest card first, it may take months and months to pay it off. So instead, pay off the smallest balance first to get a quick win and the psychological boost that comes with it. When that's paid off, you can go on to the next highest balance and so on. That's what we call, Steve, the debt snowball.
And, of course, it's a lot easier to stay out of debt than to get out of debt, right?
Well, that's exactly right. And a lot of people have every intention of staying out of debt when they get a credit card. Maybe they choose one that gives rewards. By the way, it's critical that you charge only what you can afford to pay each month. They get a card, and for several months, everything's fine. But then an unexpected expense comes up, and the easy way out is to use the credit card. So they do, intending to pay off the balance over the next few months. But then another unexpected expense hits, and there's even more debt.
That's right. And think about those unexpected expenses. Generally, if you think back, they're not that unexpected. And that's why it's important to have an emergency fund, 3 to 6 months living expenses in that fund. If you don't have one, now's a great day to start. Better than using that credit card. He's Rob West. I'm Steve Moore. This is MoneyWise. We're pre-recorded today. Don't call in, but please stay tuned.
Money and life run on the same track. But unfortunately, sometimes it seems like your money is heading in a different direction from your goals. In Never Enough, Three Keys to Financial Contentment, author Ron Blue helps you to break down all your financial options to a basic four, and then shows you how to keep it all chugging along in the right direction on the same track. Never Enough, Three Keys to Financial Contentment. Available when you click the store button at moneywiselive.org.
Our friends at Sound Mind Investing have been helping Christians reach their financial goals since 1990 with step-by-step guidance for investors just getting started, making choices in a 401k, or getting ready for retirement, all grounded in God's Word. The SMI slogan is Financial Wisdom for Living Well. More information is available online at soundmindinvesting.org. The SMI website also includes articles about common money management and investing topics. soundmindinvesting.org.
Freedom and liberty are great words to describe our citizenship here in this amazing country. But when you feel tangled up on the inside, freedom can seem like an impossible dream. Problems can overwhelm us to the point that we feel like a prisoner, with our mind racing and struggling to find relief. It can get out of control when we turn to drugs, drinking, or anything else to make that pain go away. But that brings even more pain, and freedom becomes more elusive. There is another way. The Bible says in Galatians 5:1, it was for freedom that Christ set us free. You can have true and lasting freedom through a relationship with Jesus Christ. Get rid of the bonds that keep you from peace and freedom. Learn how to have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ and make this your Independence Day. Call 888-NEED-HIM. That's 888-NEED-HIM. Or click over to chataboutjesus.com.
If the heavy burden of debt is robbing you of freedom and peace of mind, Christian Credit Counselors can help. We're a nationwide nonprofit credit counseling organization that has helped over 300,000 individuals in the last 27 years get out of credit card debt 80% faster while honoring that debt in full. To learn how Christian Credit Counselors can help you, visit ChristianCreditCounselors.org. That's ChristianCreditCounselors.org or call 800-557-1985.
And welcome back to MoneyWise Live. It's a real pleasure to have you joining us today. Hope it's sunny where you are. If it is sunny right now, don't forget, Rob, I'm looking directly at you, so don't forget your sunblock. You know, there are lots of people that want to go out there, whether it's a chore, mowing the yard, or just, you know, getting a little color, which you could use. go a little SPF 90.
It's called a baseball tan. See, when you're a dad of baseball players and you spend a lot of time out there on the diamond, the lower part of your arm is tanned. And right above your shoes,
they also call it a farmer's tan.
Farmer's
tan. A farmer gets a special tan on his legs. And so, how do we get into this? All right, okay. Jasper, Alabama. Hello, Deb, and what's on your mind today?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My husband and I are trying to help some friends and ours that are younger, and they have accumulated some debt over the years, but they're trying to work to improve their credit rating and get rid of their debt, and also to prepare so that they can increase their credit rating so that they can apply for a home loan and purchase a home for them. They have two young children and everything, and we wanted to help them, but we really didn't know how. And I know y'all had talked about the counselors that can help with that, and so that's what I wanted to find out. And then also, they have a couple of things that are showing up on their credit rating that they are unfamiliar with, and are they know that it's impacting their credit score, and so didn't really know how to begin to help them with all of that.
Okay, well, I heard four issues here, Deb, so let's just start moving through them. First of all, I'm so glad that you're trying to help these folks. I'm sure they'll be incredibly grateful to you for your assistance. You know, the first thing you can do that would really be an encouragement is just to help them understand God's way of handling money. And when we hang up here today, I want you to stay on the line, and my producer's going to grab your information, and I want to send you a copy of a book called Money and Marriage, God's Way. You know, as a young couple starting out, they need to learn God's way of handling money and understand how to do that together as a young married couple. So encourage them to work through the book a chapter at a time together and really understand the heart of God as it relates to their resources, which are really God's resources that they've been entrusted. Secondly, with regard to their credit card debt, I would completely agree. A debt management program is really one of our preferred ways of handling the payment of credit card debt. Yes, you can do it yourself and debt snowball it, but oftentimes you're going to be paying higher interest rates than you would on debt management. I don't like taking out a new loan to pay off credit card debt. I don't like the balance transfer game. I would really love to see them get into a debt management program. Now, the accounts will be closed, so temporarily their credit score will likely actually take a dip, not because they're in a debt management program. That's not factored into the formula, but the fact that these accounts are closed is going to temporarily reduce their credit score. But what it will do, though, in addition to that, which is really why they would do it, is it's going to reduce the interest rates, get them on a monthly payment that's the same, and allow them to pay this debt back 80% faster. You'll want to contact ChristianCreditCounselors.org, ChristianCreditCounselors.org. If you've got a pen handy, the number is 800-557-1985, 800-557-1985. The third thing I heard you say was that you want to help them improve their credit score. And I would just say the very best thing they can do as a young couple is to be on-time payers, control and manage their debt. So the fact that their debt is declining and ultimately paid off, that's going to help. And then they want to establish a budget, and they want to perhaps use a credit card or both a secured or an unsecured card for recurring charges that are a part of the budget that they pay off in full every month. And that on-time payment every month with debt that's declining and eventually paid off is really going to help them improve their credit score. As it relates to saving for that house, that's going to come later after this credit card debt is gone, and we really want them to save up about 20% at least for a down payment. The last thing I would say is, in terms of information they're seeing on their credit report that they don't recognize or that may be there inaccurately, there is a way that they can challenge that information by going to each of the three credit bureaus, Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion. And they can dispute any information that they think is inaccurate. And by law, the bureau has 60 days to either verify it's accurate and provide proof or delete it. And so you'll want to encourage them to get a copy of their credit report and to challenge that information. Does all of that help?
Yes, that's very helpful. So much. Good. Thank you okay. so much.
All right, Deb. God bless you.
Thanks very much, Deb. Out to Oroville, Ohio. And Alan, we have a couple of minutes here. You're thinking about retirement. Well, you've got a few years before you retire, right?
Yeah, I got all about right. 40 years. And I figured, you know, it's never too early to start planning.
No, that's right.
So right now my financial situation is between my wife and I, we have a surplus average around $3,000 a month surplus. So after all of her bills are paid. Sometimes it's more, sometimes it's less, depending on the overtime that I can get at my job. So I was just wondering, what would be a better retirement plan to invest in, a Roth IRA or a 401k, or would both be good to start? I'm not really sure where to start, and I want to, you know, get things rolling early.
Well, congrats on two fronts, Alan. Obviously, you're living well below your means because you have this much margin on a monthly basis, and you're already thinking about what you need to be doing to save for the long term. Both of those are excellent. I would say in terms of the Roth versus the 401k, my question would be, does your company offer any matching with your 401k?
No, my company right now has a pension through Central States, which is not really doing that fantastic, so I'm not trying to bank on having a pension in 40 years.
Okay. But there is a 401k that you can contribute to?
they might have one. I haven't really looked into it because all I hear about is pension. So, I mean, that's okay. Something that I could look into if they do something like that.
I would get some more information on that. If you don't have any matching, I would start with the Roth IRA. But given the amount you have available each month as surplus, you're going to max that out quickly. As a young person, you and your wife with a spousal IRA could each put in $6,000 this year. So you'll hit that $12,000 pretty quick. And then I would be looking to perhaps a 401k option if it's available or whatever retirement plan is there available at work as a second option. Anything that is offers to tax deduction is going to give you tax deferred growth, but give you a benefit now by reducing your taxable income versus the Roth, which doesn't give you the tax deduction, but grows tax free. I kind of like the idea of you having both, because when you reach retirement, you'll have these two buckets you can pull from, one that is taxable in retirement and one that's not, one that has a required minimum distribution, one that doesn't, assuming the laws stay the same. So having both of those buckets in retirement is actually a good thing, but I would put the Roth as a priority over the 401k. But do some digging as to what your options are, and if you have any questions, give us a call back.
Alan, we appreciate that. Thanks very much. And those days of pensions, Rob, for most of Americans is pretty much over, huh? I mean, you kind of have to keep an eye on it and do it yourself these days.
Yeah, you used to get a gold watch and a check for life, Steve. And now they say, well, we'll give you an account. You put in what you want and hopefully you save enough. And so, yeah, the onus is on us to save for the future.
He's Rob West. I'm Steve Moore. We're not really here today. Today's broadcast is pre-recorded, but thanks so much for listening. We'll be right back.
Do you know if you have enough? Enough money? Enough house? Do you know how much is enough? If not, Ron Blue can help with his book, Master Your Money, a step-by-step plan for experiencing financial contentment. Learn how to save, invest, and give wisely, how to create a long-term financial plan, and how to get out of debt. You'll find it all in Master Your Money by Ron Blue. Available when you click the store button at moneywiselive.org.
Hebrews 4:12 says, "For the word of God is quick and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword." Here's Beth Moore with a quick word.
Gethsemane says that we still cry out, "Take this from me." Gethsemane doesn't mean sharing in the sufferings of Christ doesn't mean we have to sit there and go, thank you, I'm so glad I get to do this. I've gone through some things I'm not thankful that I went through, but I'm thankful for what God did out of them. We can say, I do not want you to ask this of me, and I do not want you to ask this of my family. I am asking you, God, to let this cup pass from us. But the sharing in his sufferings is a position of trust that says, one way or the other, I bow my knee to you. I will choose to do your will. And it doesn't mean we didn't go to Gethsemane if he does his will that's not our will. It just means we go right there. To that point where we go, I so badly do not want to do this. I do not know what to do. But I will do. I submit myself to you in trust that you are God and you are good. That is fellowshipping in the sufferings of Christ. We can suffer and we can come out of that so mean and so mad at God we do not know what to do. Now, by all means, wrestle. Christ himself asked why. But it means when it comes down, we go, I submit myself to you. I submit myself to you.
Beth and team are thankful for the grace gift to serve you. Your letters, prayers, and support are a vital part of this program. To request this month's thank you gift, text the word gift to 57682. Again, text GIFT to 57682. Or go to BethMoore.org/donate. That's BethMoore.org/donate.
The financial wealth you leave behind could be the best thing that ever happened to your loved ones, or the worst. In Splitting Heirs, giving your money and things to your children without ruining their lives, Ron Blue explains why it's important to make these decisions now, instead of forcing your heirs to do it later. Splitting Heirs will foster a real appreciation for the precious resources that God has entrusted to you. And it's available when you click the store button at moneywiselive.org.
It's MoneyWise Live, God's wisdom for your finances. And again, We're pre-recorded today, so please don't try to call in. But Mark and Shannon, we're coming your way. And right now it's Gilberto in West Palm Beach. And how can we help you, sir?
Hi, guys. Thank you very much for taking my call. You hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay. God bless you, and God bless your ministry. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
I have a question. About 2 months ago, I quit. I resigned to my former employer, and they have my 401k in one bank institution. And then I am in a new employer, so they have a match as well. So I started from zero with them. So I don't know what to do. If roll over from the former institution to the new that they have, or living there, I don't know what to do. So I would like some guidance on this, please.
Yeah. Gilberto, do you know the balance of your 401k from your previous employer?
Yes, it's about 40,000.
Okay. And do you know if your new employer will allow you to roll that in to the new 401k?
Yes. In fact, they suggest, they offer that if we want to roll over to their new institution.
Yeah.
But on the other side, I have another company offering me to handle that part. So I don't know what to do, you know. So.
Well, you've got a couple of options. One is you could leave it there. I don't recommend that. Second option is you could roll it into the new 401k. I don't have a problem with that option. It would give you a little bit more to work with, so you could maximize the investment options in there and probably use a couple of different funds in your investment strategy, because you're not starting at zero and building from there. The third option is you do start the new 401k and you make that the place you put your retirement money moving forward, but you roll this old 401k to a new individual retirement account, a traditional IRA, at another institution where it can be managed there. And the benefit of that is you have a lot more control over the cost, how you compensate someone or an institution to handle that account or even manage it. You have a lot more control over the investments that are in it, because once you get in an IRA, you can essentially put it in any mutual fund or exchange traded fund that you'd like. And, you know, it just gives you a lot more flexibility that way. So whichever you're more comfortable with, I would go with. It's probably easier to put it in the 401k, the new one, because you've got it all in the same place. But if you wanted to go into the IRA, I'd visit with our friends at soundmindinvesting.org. Do some reading on their website. That would give you some great ideas on some great high-quality mutual funds. And then you could open the IRA with Vanguard or Charles Schwab or Betterment, one of those. And they would have some great options, and Sound Mind Investing could help you with your investment selection.
Does that make sense, Gilberto?
Yes. Yes, it does. And I don't know if it is proper to say some institution name here on the air. New York Life is something that is a good institution for handling that former one?
Well, I would prefer you not go to an insurance company. I'd rather you go to a low-cost custodian like the ones that I mentioned, Schwab or Vanguard, where you're not buying an insurance product, but where you're actually taking this retirement account and just investing it in very low-cost but very high-quality investments that are aligned with your goals and objectives. And that's what you're going to get when you go to Sound Mind Investing, do some reading, and then when you open an account at a Schwab or a Betterment or a Vanguard, you're not using an insurance company. You're using a brokerage firm that gives you access to very high quality investments. That would be my preference with an IRA with about $40,000.
And Gilberto, if you don't consider yourself really knowledgeable when it comes to investing or mutual funds in particular, you can purchase a copy of the Sound Mind Investing Handbook at their website. And for as long as I've been doing this, I've never found one resource that made it so easy to understand the world of investing, and also from a biblical perspective, than this one. It's called the Sound Mind Investing Handbook. You'll find it at soundmindinvesting.org. We wish you the best with that. Thanks very much. Shannon's in Flint, Michigan. And what's your question, Shannon? You're trying to insure your home. Is that what's going on?
Yes, thank you so much for taking my call. I really appreciate your ministry. Have a house that's built in the 1930s, about 2,200 square feet, and the insurance company we've been going through has the replacement value and then a percentage of that to cover our contents and goods, which is like three times the value of the house. There are some insurance companies which will do the value of the house. I'm just wondering what your take is on house insurance.
Yeah. Well, just as a general rule of thumb, Shannon, I would insure for the replacement cost. That way you're completely covered no matter what the real estate market does. And you never want to insure for a fixed amount. So I would look at that. Now, if you feel like it's inflated, it's not a proper amount for the true cost of replacement, you can ask for another review of that. You may also want to shop around for a less expensive replacement cost homeowner insurance policy. You could go to policygenius.com for ratings on the top insurance companies offering homeowners policies. But keep in mind, cheaper doesn't always mean better. You want a high quality company that's going to be there for you during a difficult time, be easy to work with, great customer service, quick to pay, all of those kinds of things. And that's where you want a high rated company. But price is obviously one factor you should consider. But I would generally go for the replacement cost as opposed to the resale value, which would fluctuate with the real estate market.
And as most people typically know, Rob, often if you fold your auto insurance into your homeowner's policy, you can generally get a little better rate. So it really pays to shop around, particularly about every 3 years. Generally, your first year's rate is pretty low. They want to get you in as a customer. Second year, they jack it up a little bit. You kind of ignore that. But the third year is when the insurance companies really try to recover some of their costs and what they gave you as a freebie early on. So shop around every couple of years.
Well, that's right. And our producer, Rich Rosel, who's providing research today, made a great point. He said for older homes or historic homes, the cost of rebuilding might be very high because of ornate woodwork or specialty type items. So in those cases, if you're going to plan to rebuild with an eye towards something more consistent with today's architecture and construction, you may want to go with the market value. So that is something to consider.
Okay, and of course, if Rob West lives in a home, that automatically makes it historic. He's Rob West. I'm Steve Moore. You're you, and we're glad to have you with us today. We'll be back with more after this.
Investing is more than just returns. It's an expression of who you are and what you value. Does the way you invest your money reflect your identity as a Christian? At Eventide, we design investments for performance and a better world, so you can invest with the confidence to reach your financial goals while remaining true to your Christian values and commitments. We call this investing that makes the world rejoice. More is available at investeventide.com. That's investeventide.com.
Thank you from the bottom of my heart. I couldn't have had the procedure I needed without CHM's help sharing the bills. That letter from a member displays Christian Healthcare Ministry's purpose to glorify God and serve His people. CHM is the original non-insurance voluntary health cost-sharing ministry, enabling its members to share the cost of each other's medical bills. Call 800-791-6225 or visit chministries.org.
The Moody Radio Verse of the Week for this Independence Day is found in John 8:34-36. Jesus answered them, "Truly, truly, I say to you, everyone who practices sin is a slave to sin. The slave does not remain in the house forever. The Son remains forever. So if the Son sets you free, you will be free indeed." That's John 8:34-36, the Moody Radio Verse of the Week.
We all long for something good, true, and secure. There's a hunger for a hope that goes beyond politics and entertainment and reaches deep into our souls. That hunger can only be satisfied by Jesus. For more than 90 years, Moody Radio has faithfully delivered that message of hope to millions so they can take the next step in their walk with Christ.
Call 1-800-DL-MOODY or visit moodyradio.org.
Your family and your money are two very important subjects. That's why in this month's MoneyWise e-magazine, we're giving your family tips and tools to grow closer to God, closer together, and closer to true financial freedom.
Get practical advice to strengthen financial communication in your marriage, infuse more budget-friendly family activities into your week, and a lot more. Your free MoneyWise e-magazine subscription is waiting for you at MoneyWise.org/signup.
With SRN News, I'm John Scott. Mayor Bill de Blasio says he's proposing slashing the New York City police budget by $1 billion. De Blasio said the department had found ways to fund the cuts from its current $6 billion budget that would open up more funding for youth and other community programs. There was no immediate comment from the NYPD. A 16-year-old boy killed, a younger teen was wounded before dawn in what is being called Seattle's occupied protest zone. Today's shooting was the second deadly shooting in that area. The Supreme Court invalidated a Louisiana abortion law, that law requiring abortion doctors to obtain hospital admitting privileges. Stocks closed higher on Wall Street, clawing back half of their losses from last week. Among big-name companies, Boeing and Apple did especially well. The Dow picked up 580 points today, the NASDAQ ahead 116. This is SRN News.
Hey, a real pleasure to have you with us today. This is MoneyWise Live. I'm Steve Moore, that other guy over there, the guy with the answers. He's Rob West, and we're happy to have you with us on the program today. However, we are pre-recorded. We won't be taking your calls, but I think the upcoming information will help you and bless you and make you a wise steward of what God's given you. Thank you so much for joining us today. Yes, we're talking about money and finances on a Christian radio show and Christian radio station. Why would we do that? Well, because God's Word has over 2,300 verses at least that talk about money and finances, because God knew that throughout our lives that money, finances, our jobs, our careers would really be competing with what He wants to do in our lives, which is to meet our needs and to use His grace and mercy to make us more like Him. And obviously, money can complicate all that. So that's why we have so many principles to direct us and helping us do that today. Obviously, your host, Rob West. To Ohio, and Mark, what's your question today, sir?
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I was calling about getting your opinion on the timing on paying off my house. We've been saving up to pay off our house. We had talked to another financial advisor about just kind of reviewing our retirement. And in the process of that, he suggested that we don't pay off our house because we have such a low interest rate. Yeah. So that kind of went against kind of how I was brought up. And so I just wanted to ask your opinion on that.
Yeah, Mark, you know, there's not a wrong decision here. I think if we were to back up, you mentioned that you were brought up, obviously, I suspect, in a Bible-believing home where you were taught that debt is bad and we should get it paid off as quickly as we can. And pretty much that's how you could sum up what the Bible says. It's not a sin. There's nothing wrong with borrowing money, especially when we're buying it for appreciating assets, which usually is the case with a home. But there's nothing good in the Bible about debt. It's often talked about in the context of a curse, and it says the wicked borrows and does not repay, and you know, there's just a lot of warnings throughout Scripture regarding the use of debt. And we also recognize that just looking at this from a financial perspective, that whenever you pay off debt, you have a guaranteed return equivalent to the interest rate, not to mention the non-financial side that says you have a lot more peace of mind knowing that I own my home. Nobody can take it away from me. I have the deed to it. It's my property. Really, it's the Lord's property, but the bank doesn't own it. And you can sleep at night knowing that. And then you've got the equivalent of what you were paying in the form of a mortgage payment that you can put back into additional savings or additional giving or whatever else it might be. You can also have some peace of mind during a market like the one we're in now, where we're going to have a recession, where the market is underperforming even your low interest rate. It could even be negative for several years. So I think from that perspective, we've just never had anybody who paid off their house call us back and say, you know, we wish we wouldn't have done that. We wish we still had some debt. We just don't get those calls. And I think for that reason, we're always inclined to say, go for it. If you have the ability to pay it off, do it. Own it outright. And then take that money that's been freed up and ask the Lord what he would have you to do with the rest of it. Sure, your advisor could make the case on paper that financially, assuming all the modeling comes out exactly the way he says it will, you could be better off by keeping the mortgage. I just think you'll never go wrong paying it off.
Okay.
Makes sense,
Mark?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, we appreciate your call.
Thanks, Mark. You know, Rob, we've been taking these kinds of calls and this specific question for many decades now, and often it seems that the husband and the wife have a different perspective on this. Not always, but generally speaking, the husband doesn't want to pay it off. He wants to be a little bit more aggressive, do other things with that money, and it's the wife who sees the home a bit more, well, like a nest and a place where the family should grow up and be raised and hang out, and often her perspective and his perspective may not be the same. So there's an opportunity to pray and bring God into the equation.
Well, I think that's exactly right. A couple of thoughts. Number one, that is usually the case from my experience, although it could be the opposite. So it's not always that way. But clearly, we need to make this decision together. One of the rules I've often used when it comes to borrowing is we don't take on any debt. And I would include we don't continue to keep debt around when we have the ability to pay it off in that equation, unless husband and wife are in complete agreement, which would say that if she really feels like or he really feels like we should pay this off, then don't even think twice about it. Just do it. But if you're both okay with either option, then I think you need to look at the finances, ask the Lord to give you wisdom, and you can't make a wrong decision in that case.
Yeah, but you borrowed for your cabin cruiser, right?
The cabin cruiser. Yeah, you must have me mistaken with somebody. No cabin cruiser. It sounds nice, actually, but no.
Yeah,
cabin
you don't
cruisers.
Even live near the lake, so what's the point? Chattanooga, Tennessee. Hey, hello, Teresa. What's your question today?
How are you? Thanks for
taking
my call.
Very good.
I think you sort of summed up my question just with that last caller.
Okay.
But my thing is, I have a brother-in-law who keeps saying, you never pay off a home. If you pay it off, go and borrow $50,000 on it and just let it sit in the bank and draw interest. You never pay off a home. And I have paid off my house two times. But the first time I borrowed money after listening to him, I had all three of my bathrooms redone with bath fitters. And then I had an extreme makeover in my kitchen. And I even borrowed money and put a car on my equity. Is that feasible?
Well, it's possible. I wouldn't recommend it because you're taking an asset that under with an auto loan is just secured by the vehicle and you're attaching it to your home. So if something were to happen and you could no longer make the payment on that, you're putting your home at risk instead of just putting the car at risk. And so I'd rather you, if you're going to borrow for the car, put as much down as you can, but then borrow with an auto loan where the collateral is the car itself, not the home that you live in. But is there anything wrong with borrowing from your equity in your home to do repairs or improvements, things like that? No, I don't think so. We don't want to borrow from your home to pay off credit card debt or something that's unsecured and secure it to your house. But if you have the ability to borrow and you have a repayment plan that makes sense, and in the case of an equity loan, I'd make sure that you can pay that off quicker than your traditional mortgage. I wouldn't extend that out over 30 years, but there's nothing wrong with improving your home. Let's just make sure that that payment fits into your budget. Hopefully we can pay that off much quicker and get to a place where we're debt-free. But I absolutely wouldn't subscribe to the idea that just because you own a home, you shouldn't have it free and clear. You should always owe something on it for some reason, especially if that money's in the bank, because you're just going under each month. You're paying interest for no reason, not to mention you just don't own the home outright. So I would say borrow as little as possible and pay it off as quick as possible. And when you're borrowing from the home equity, don't borrow for things that are not related to the house.
Yeah. I think that's great advice for you, Teresa. I'm sure your brother is a fine, upstanding man, but we think his financial advice for you in this regard is kind of off base. But you'll have to make that decision yourself. But thanks so much for calling in today. You're listening to MoneyWise Live with Rob West. I'm Steve Moore. Remember that as a 501c3 ministry, we really do depend upon your generosity and your partnership. You're able to give online when you visit MoneyWiseLive.org. By just clicking the donate tab at the top of the page, moneywiselive.org, and we thank you so much in advance. This brief pause, and we will be right back.
Many people are experiencing financial challenges, such as credit card debt, downsizing, dead-end jobs, and depleted savings. In fact, more than half of all divorces are the result of financial pressures at home. But there's hope. In Your Money Counts, biblical financial expert Howard Dayton shows that the Bible is a veritable blueprint for managing your finances, and you'll discover the profound impact it has on your relationship with God. Your Money Counts is available when you click the store button at moneywiselive.org.
This is Barry McGuire. I'm a car guy, and I'm here to help you understand God's purpose for your life through the eyes of a layman. Have you ever wondered why God put such a priority on the sharing of your faith from Genesis to Revelation? Before he placed you in your mother's womb, he set you apart to be his spokesman. He appointed you as his ambassador and admonished you to be the salt of the earth and the light of the world, and to love your neighbors as much as you love yourself, with a warning that if you don't, if you deny him before man, he'll deny you before his Father. That's heavy. Why is the sharing your faith so critical? Because it compels you to know him more so you can share him more effectively. That the sharing of your faith may become effective for the full knowledge of every good thing that is in you for the sake of Christ. Your job is to ignite revival outside the walls of your church by moving everyone every day closer to Jesus. If you need help doing that, go to ROTW.com.
One of the common areas in our office has some beautiful flowers in a vase every day. They change color and types throughout the year. But one day last winter, I finally slowed down long enough to smell those beauties. There was no smell, and it turned out...
Those are fake.
You know, flowers can look so real, but have no life. Just like so many folks who look like they really belong to Jesus Christ, but there's no life there. Jesus described people who would come before him on Judgment Day with lots of Christian credentials, but no real faith. He says that he will tell them that he never knew them. That's why the Bible says to examine yourself to see whether you are in the faith. The time to realize that you don't really know him is now. You can avoid being turned away by acknowledging what Jesus did on the cross for you. Being real and honest about your sin and wanting Jesus to take over your life as your Savior in your heart. We'd love to help you get started. Call us at 888-NEED-HIM or chat with us at chataboutjesus.com.
Many people adopt an attitude toward marriage and finances that it'll all work out somehow, but sadly, it often doesn't. Financial woes can devastate a marriage, but there is a better way. God's Way. Money and Marriage God's Way by Howard Dayton will help you discover God's approach to growing your finances, strengthening your relationship with your mate, and cultivating godly joy. Money and Marriage God's Way is available when you click the store button at moneywiselive.org.
Pleased to have you with us today on MoneyWise Live. Thanks so much for tuning in, and thanks also to this fine station for giving us their generous time each day. In fact, if you enjoy what you hear on this station, let them know. Give them a call or stop on by someday. Stick your head in. Take them a box of donuts. Let them know that you appreciate their ministry. Now, we're on tape today. We're pre-recorded, so please don't try to call in. But we have callers all lined up, so let's begin. Berwyn, Illinois, and Tony, thanks for your patience, sir. What's on your mind?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Great.
I was calling because I recently applied to at a dealership trying to buy a car, and I actually applied at a few different ones. Ended up not buying a single car, and my credit score went down.
Yeah.
Apparently, I have a lot of credit inquiries, so I'm wondering if, you know, how long would it take for the credit inquiries to remove off my credit score and check it back up, I guess.
Yeah. A couple of thoughts here, Tony. Number one is... hard inquiries, which is what you're talking about here, when you authorize a lender to pull your credit, to review your credit for the purpose of determining whether or not they'll extend you a loan, they do reduce your score, because the idea in the algorithm is that you're out there, if you're out there seeking new credit, potentially you're going to take on more credit than you should, or it's going to change your ratios, and therefore, you are more of a high-risk candidate, or you could be. And so it's not going to affect it a lot. You shouldn't see a major decline, somewhere between 20 and 40 points generally. And remember, there's bunching too, which means that if you're seeking credit for one purpose, like a car loan, and you have multiple lenders pull credit within a certain window of time, those are all going to be seen as one. However, you do need to be careful about letting people pull your credit, because that hard inquiry will stay on there for a couple of years. Now, I don't want to scare you, because every month that goes by, it's less and less significant, and your score will likely rebound pretty quickly. But the number of inquiries you have over a 6-month period or 12-month period does factor in. So here's what I would do in the future. If you're thinking about buying something that will require a loan, like a car, pull your own credit. So go to annualcreditreport.com or get your credit score from Credit Karma or from your credit card company, whatever it might be, and then take that with you and say, listen, I understand that if we do business together, you're going to have to pull your own lender report. And by the way, your score will vary slightly from what you get on your own. Shouldn't vary very much. I understand that you'll need to pull this. But for the purpose of me evaluating who I want to do business with, I want you to tell me what you can do for me based on this credit score I'm telling you I have. And that way, you will go through the process without all of these different institutions doing a hard inquiry on your credit report. Then, once you decide who you want to work with, you narrow it down, you actually decide if you're going to go ahead with the purchase, of course, you're going to have to let them pull your credit. But you're not out there shopping it and letting all these different people pull inquiries, which are going to rack up and all be on your credit report for a couple of years. So I wouldn't sweat it. Give it time. It'll bounce back. The fact that you didn't take out the loan means it's going to come back even quicker. But in the future, let's not let a lot of people pull your credit, if you know what I mean.
Tony, do you mind if we ask about the car you're looking for? Do you have much of a down payment? Have you thought this through well?
I have about $5,000, and I wanted to get a brand new SUV because I was hoping to get zero interest. However, the SUVs are kind of expensive, so
yeah.
I'm thinking of holding off and maybe just getting an older one. But yeah, that's just my thought right now. A
couple of years, maybe. I mean, unless you have your heart set on something, and you've really thought this through and you've got a lot of extra cash laying around. We always love a 2 or 3 year old car. I realize that may not be quite as, fancy, but, a 2 year old car that's been kept up well, even in Illinois where they use some salt on the roads, that might really help you in the long run as far as your budget is concerned. But we wish you the best with that, okay?
Okay, I appreciate it, guys. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Tony.
God bless. Thanks. Okay, let's go to Cleveland, Ohio next. And Fern, a pleasure to have you there. And how can we help you?
Hi, yeah, thanks for taking my call and thanks for your ministry. I want to make some decisions about life insurance, whether I should get a term life versus whole life or final expense insurance. I'll be turning 70 next week, and I will be drawing down my Social Security, and I still work. So, but I'm just trying to make some decisions. I had a Roth IRA and a SEP IRA, but I had to draw down that money because a couple of years ago I had some financial needs, and so that's kind of my situation. And just wanted some wisdom from you guys.
Yeah, Fern, tell me the purpose of the insurance. If you were to pass away, would there be somebody that would be have a financial hardship because either you were providing some income to them or it would cause them to incur additional expense?
No, I just I'm single, so what I would want to have primarily for burial purpose, for funeral expenses, with my family members. I have brothers, yeah. Three brothers, and that's the primary purpose.
Okay. And do you have some assets that that would be a part of your estate that would be able to be available to cover funeral expenses, or because you've pulled the money out of the Roth and, do you not have much to speak of?
Right. And that's why I wanted to consider some kind of, life insurance, whether it's term or whole life or one of those final expense kinds of programs.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I would shop around. I think the key is it's going to be a pretty expensive, both term and whole life policies. Term will tend to be cheaper. And so if you're in good health, you could probably get a 10-year policy. I think the key would be trying to figure out exactly what it is that you need and don't take out more than what is required so you can keep the cost down. By joining a memorial society in your state or a cremation society, you can get significantly discounted funeral and burial costs. And in most cases, you can fund your own burial costs without needing insurance. The key is you've got to balance your ability to save so you've got that money there and you're not having to continue to pay for coverage even into your 80s and beyond, which again will get even more expensive, but also protecting right now so that there is enough in the way of being able to provide something to your loved ones that will be able to provide a proper burial and funeral and the expenses related to it. So I would probably look at a term policy or a burial policy, but don't overinsure because really it's for a specific need. And then I would also look into a memorial society or a cremation society just to see exactly what is realistic, what's needed, and perhaps you could even get on a payment plan to go ahead and start paying that now so that need and expense is not there in the future. So do a little bit of a homework on that, and if you have any other questions, give us a call back.
No, and in fact, I do recall you a few weeks ago, you did mention the Memorial Society, which I'd never heard of, and I have kind of forgotten about them. So, yeah, and there is a Cleveland Memorial Society, and I will check that out as well.
Okay, very good. There is also a minimal death benefit from Social Security, and so you might want to check into that as well. But we appreciate you calling, Fern. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, Fern. God bless. Okay, Rob, scenario for you. You're 60 years old. You have a tight income, not a lot of money in the bank. Should you spend your money on a term life insurance or long-term care? Or are they different enough that that's not an appropriate question?
Well, the question I would have for that individual is, what is the need? So is that person still working or are they retired? If they're retired and there's enough there in the way of savings by Social Security, but also their retirement assets that they're perhaps drawing an income from, there perhaps is not a need for life insurance at that point. The greater risk for somebody you leave behind, a surviving spouse, is the long-term care insurance because that is perhaps the biggest expense during that season of life. Now, as 60-year-olds, more and more 60-year-olds are still working, and if there's still an ongoing need for income, then I would say the life insurance would be key because we want a surviving spouse to be able to have the death benefit to be able to replace the income that they might have planned to continue to earn for the next 5 or 10 years, depending on how long they were planning to work. So both are important. If you're still working, there's probably more need for life insurance. If you're retired, the greater need would clearly be long-term care.
Okay, makes sense. Rob, we're going to sneak in an email here from Myra. She says, "Dear Rob and Steve, my son is a seventh grader. What's the best avenue to start investing for college?"
Yeah, Myra, I'm glad you're thinking about this now. As a seventh grader, you still have plenty of time, and we love the 529 Education Savings Plan. This is where you're going to put money away. You don't get the deduction when it goes in, but it does grow tax-free, assuming you use it for qualified educational expenses. It doesn't impact scholarships because you can pull it out pro rata to any scholarship awards, and it's going to give you tax-deferred growth, which means it'll grow even faster. It also works very well in the sense that it's treated as an asset of the parent. So if you do qualify for financial aid, it won't impact you negatively. The best way to find the right 529 for you, because some states that have state income tax do provide a deduction for contributions to a 529. So the best place to investigate the right one for you is at savingforcollege.com. savingforcollege.com, savingforcollege.com.
Thank you, Myra. Obviously, when it comes to this, earlier is better, but it certainly isn't too late with him in the seventh grade, and we trust that this will all work well for you and your son. And if you'd like to send Rob a real quick email, the address is questions@moneywise.org, questions@moneywise.org. Hey, thanks so much for tuning in, for listening, and for telling others about the broadcast. We certainly appreciate that. I just want to thank our production team today, Amy Reed, Judy Crone, and Rich Rosel. MoneyWise Live is a partnership between Moody Radio and MoneyWise Media. Have a great remainder of your day, and then join us again next time.